I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. The iPhone, the Android, these are the tools of the 21st century, especially for the young and the restless. How restless? That is at the center of new investigation by researchers. At least they're presenting themselves as sociologists, anthropologists, and others collecting facts. Some of them, of course, are corporations with bills in mind. On your Android and iPhones, because there is a device or an apparatus that is able to track where you are, even how long you talk and your messaging, even your Twitter feeds. Some of this has just been revealed. Robert Lee Hotz, who writes science for the Wall Street Journal, points to the fact that the revelations of the last days are a surprise to many iPhone and Android users. I am not one. I have an iPad. And to my knowledge, I'm not being tracked, but you never know. Robert Lee Hotz, a very good evening to you. This revelation over these last days that iPhones and Androids can be tracked. In fact, sometimes I note in your most recent piece in the Wall Street Journal, every few seconds an Android can take in data about where you are exactly. Was that well known to buyers or to renters of this equipment heretofore?
Well, I think, you know, there are two issues here. And I feel obliged at the outset, John, to point out that as an owner of the iPad, you too are being... your location data is also being collected.
I feel much better now.
I thought you might. First of all, you know, any mobile phone, any mobile device like an iPad or an Android phone or an iPhone, a cell phone, by just the nature of what it is, has location tracking capacity. Because in order to make a phone call, in order to receive an email, in order to send a message, your phone has to know where you are in relationship to the nearest cell phone antenna or Wi-Fi hotspot. So this is fine. And cell phone companies have been collecting this kind of data since the first mobile phone. That data is protected by privacy laws, by regulations. It's very constrained in terms of what the companies themselves can do with it. I think some of the privacy concerns that have been stirred recently by these disclosures about what Apple is doing on the iPhone and what Google in a slightly different way is doing, is because these are not location tracking files that are required for the operation of your phone. They are simply, in the case of Apple, as I understand it, this is an unencrypted file that's on your iPhone. Someone else, a hacker, whatever, could get access to it. And in a slightly related way, the same thing is true with the Android phones, which are run on an operating system produced by Google. Now, I should say that both companies will quickly say that this information, which is sent back to them, it's anonymous. You can opt out if you want. But the truth is most people don't know this, and that's part of the problem. On the second level, we're getting increasingly interested in is that these phones, because so many of us have them. I mean, three-quarters of the world's population now carries a mobile phone, a smartphone of some sort. It is like equipping a pack of wolves, a herd of water buffalo migrating geese with radio collars. We can now track just about where everybody in the world is coming and going in aggregate. And when you can do this, when you can really start looking at really very large numbers of accurate real-time data points, and I'm talking billions of data points, you can start to see patterns and relationships in human behavior that until now we had no way of getting even a fleeting glimpse of. And this is revolutionizing social science. And for the first time, we're getting these real... hard looks at how we behave in the aggregate, how we behave as a social network, as a socially connected, relationship-driven species. And that is really setting science on its ear.
You spoke to the director of MIT's Human Dynamics Laboratory, who gave you a fabulous quote. People can get this God's eye view of human behavior. What people? Who is that people in that sentence? Do we know who the people are, Robert Lee?
Well, again, there are two sides to this coin. The companies with whom we deal have full and detailed information on every single one of us and our mobile devices and it's linked to our address and to our identity and to our financial information because, of course, we have to pay a bill, and it's linked to our calls because if we challenge our bill, they have to be able to prove you really made the call and you really were where they said you were and those sorts of things. But at the same time, this kind of location information is hugely attractive to advertisers. There's a whole course in a very, very lucrative industry now in offering location-based services. People get traffic reports, real-time congestion. Most of those are collected by a company called AirSage, for instance, which takes millions of cell phone locations from cell phone users, anonymously, they will say, processes them, you know, a billion or more times a day and can tell you what's going on the highway over the hill that you can't see. It may make you want to take a detour. Now, that's all commercial. At the same time, academic researchers are starting to get their hands on some of these really large data sets. And when I say a large data set, I mean every single phone call made inside an entire country for a month. And with some serious advances in statistical physics and kind of large-scale computational network and analytics, they can now crunch these numbers in real time and start to deduce some quite extraordinary patterns about where we behave, I mean, how we behave. I mean, for instance, I talked to a group at Northeastern University up in Boston that has been looking at data stripped of names and personal identifiers that was donated by a European cell phone company. And by looking at commuting patterns of several hundred thousand people over a period of some weeks, they were able to see that even though each one of us as an individual thinks we're a random actor, you know, I just have decided right now to go to the store, I'm going to go to work now as opposed to tomorrow. I mean, we think we're making on-the-fly decisions. Take us together. We follow a very predictable mathematical pattern. And what they tell me is that if they have enough information about your past movements, they can tell, they can predict where you'll be at any given time in the future with something like 93%. Accuracy.
That is really cool. I want to know the day I die, of course. Now, the other thing...
And where you'll be.
And
right.
Where I'll be. The other thing I like, this Twitter messages to present enough information so that they can predict the direction of the Dow Jones Index 6 days in advance, up to an 87.6% accuracy so far. That is what you'd call a hedge. That's a major hedge. Is the street using this already, or did they just read it in your column, Robert?
Well, I am told that there are some hedge funds that have been eager to take up this this analytic and place a bet on it as a way of seeing if it really works. Because, of course, this is, as an academic matter, you know, the analysis is retrospective. It's sort of like predicting an earthquake after it happens.
Sure.
But, yeah, the street is interested in this stuff. There are other researchers that have done, not using Twitter, but using other kinds of pattern analysis based on these kinds of large-scale social network relationships that can be derived from cell phone data, that have figured out some things about investment patterns and that I've been told are now being used by at least one large European central bank. They, of course, won't say which bank.
Right. And the other detail here, polling doesn't use this material yet, and yet it seems that we're developing a science engineering that is using this data for vast decision-making. The one thing that I was struck by was the ability to predict a person's politics on the basis of a couple of apps that have been downloaded already. That clearly is a future for political gamesmanship.
Clearly, there is a very attractive aspect to this kind of work for anyone interested in influencing large groups of people, whether you're influencing them to make some sort of purchasing decision or whether you're influencing them toward an issue or toward a candidate. You know, you say polling. Now, it's polling has got its proponents and its detractors, but polling, of course, is an art form that takes a small sampling of us and then tries to extrapolate to the whole. What's extraordinary about this kind of data that's made available by cell phones that we have all volunteered to carry is that you don't need to extrapolate anything. You can, given access to the right databases and the right analytic tools, deal with the whole actual crowd, you know, the whole citizenry, the whole congregation of the United States or whatever country. I did notice last week that the United Kingdom, for instance, has put out which has been very proactive on creating different kinds of databases on its citizenry and putting up video surveillance and crime cameras and things, has put out a contract proposal for just such a kind of national system of networked social relationship databases that they can both monitor and their languages influence
wow.
events. Now, this is not Procter & Gamble or AT&T or some researchers at a laboratory at MIT. This is a national government that's talking about doing this.
Robert Lee Hotz for the Wall Street Journal. He writes science, and this is God's Eye View Human Behavior of the 21st Century. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show.